Guys, do you agree with Caleb Williams that the biggest problem with the Bears beating the Blitz is, quote, communication?
One, communication. Two, is making just faster adjustments throughout the game, having better communication between myself, coaches, and offensive line and things like that, making sure we're on the same page and making the adjustments we need to, you know, in game. Obviously, you have adjustments and things like that that you practice throughout the week, but, you know, the other team's job is to try and confuse you, throw different things at you, different looks, and so being able to, you know, adjust quickly in game, I think is the most important thing, and starts with communication.
How much confidence do you have in Williams to handle pressure better Sunday than he did against the Texans?
Well, I don't know that it's on him. I don't know that he can do that, frankly. I don't know that he knows everything that he's looking at, and I'm not sure that the... I don't know that it's on him. I think that this is a real problem because the center has a lot to do with it. And even when they went silent count, they had Nate Davis telling the center when to snap. So I just don't know who knows what the hell they're doing and who's calling the shots on what they're seeing. And I struggle with this question for that very reason. I think the quarterback, as a general rule, needs to be the guy that has a good feel for it. I don't think that's the case with a rookie quarterback. I don't think it's his fault. I think they're trying to coach him up to that end. I wish there was a more veteran presence at center, and I mean with the Bears, someone who has been with the Bears and knows what they're trying to do, etc. So I think that communication probably is a bit of a problem, but you know, I'm laying a lot of faith and hopes and dreams on the fact that DeForest Buckner has got an ankle injury and looks like a high ankle sprain, and those things take 6 weeks. So I'm not expecting him to play. And I think having a veteran monster type guy in the middle of the defense, even if he's aging as Buckner, I think losing that helps the Bears. Does that make any sense? But no, I don't know that they're going to be able to fix their communication problems overnight. I think they got to fix their offense. They got to run their offense in a different fashion. And I don't think that I think communication probably is a problem, but I don't think it can be fixed right now with these people.
I agree with you, Melly. This is tough because I don't know if that's the biggest problem. Because it's really more about the offensive line. And I guess you could say communication between, you know, Caleb and the offensive line, or, you know, Shane Waldron and the offensive line. But that offensive line to me is more of the bigger problem. And I don't know if communication is going to help with that all together. I do, however, feel a little bit more confident with Williams probably handling the pressure just because the Colts defense is missing Buckner, and it's not as probably great as the Texans defense. So you're playing pretty much a little, probably not as great of a defense. So that gives me a little bit more confidence, but this is a real problem, and it really just goes to the offensive line. And I think you need a lot more than just communication to help this.
But I think that's where it starts. I think that's what he's saying. And I think that when you talk about the whole communication, it's Caleb Williams identifying the fronts and the Caleb Williams communicating with the offensive line, who were communicating with themselves. And also, by the way, the receivers have to be on the same page because they can't run the wrong routes, because as Cole Kmet told us, that sometimes gets in the way and leads to a sack. They're playing a team. The good news is they're playing a team that certainly has not historically come after the quarterback at the rate the Texans did. 41% of the time is a heck of a lot of blitzing. And now the Colts last year were dead last in the league in blitzing. Gus Bradley has had a bad start, the defensive coordinator for the Colts, to this season. They're 0-2 for a reason. Their defense is part of that. They can't stop the run, so they can't earn the right to rush the passer. And they can't really earn the right to be that creative or aggressive defensively. Now, if they can do that against the Bears, they probably look at the offensive line of the Bears as an opportunity for them to get well and to get whole. And Caleb Williams is talking about, well, if they can only identify what's coming, they can better handle it when it does come after them and the blitz happens and all those things. So I think that's what he's trying to say. He's trying to also explain that it's either one of two things, and it's easier to acknowledge you need to improve your communication than it is to you need to improve your execution. Because when you say it's about execution, you imply that you're just not good. And I think with communication, when that's the messaging, then you're saying, well, we can get better because everyone can communicate better. And I think that's probably the right approach to take if you're the quarterback of the Bears.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of our 7 o'clock guest, Brad Biggs. Is running game coordinator Chris Morgan getting a free pass with Shane Waldron taking all the heat on the Bears' failed running game? Morgan was promoted from offensive line coach and awarded another title after Luke Getsy was fired. Is there a conflict in the running game?
I don't know if there's a conflict. There's not enough maybe head-to-head conflicts that they're winning.
That's right.
I think that what happens after a game like Sunday night, as disastrous as that was, and it comes after a game where you really weren't good offensively in the opener, all of a sudden it's crisis mode, and I have identified it as a full-fledged crisis with the offense. You drafted touchdowns. What happened to that? You got an offensive line that you thought was pretty good. What happened to that? So what we're used to doing here, and in a lot of NFL cities, is that we point the finger at the offensive coordinator because it's got to be him. Can't be just all the five guys. It's the easiest scapegoat there is. And then, well, if it's not Shane Waldron because he just got here 5 minutes ago, well, it must be the guy that they kept, the only offensive line coach or the offensive position coach that Matt Eberflus retained. So it's got to be Simo, the guy with the nickname, right? Yeah. I don't know about that. Sometimes players are just bad. Sometimes it comes down to the players one-on-one losing battles and guys who aren't playing at a certain level, a skill level, a strength level, whatever it is, however you want to describe it. I read headlines and, boy, the Bears missed out and Clint Kubiak, because look at the Saints. My God, the Saints. They're on a historically offensive pace in New Orleans. They got 91 points in two games. Why didn't the Bears hire Clint Kubiak? They would somehow block better. I don't know about that. It's not always the coach. It's not always the scheme. Sometimes it's mano and mano, win a battle, and the Bears are losing too many.
I didn't really think too much about Chris Morgan. I do love this question, but I feel like he got promoted because the running game was pretty good overall last season, but that's mainly because of Justin Fields. So now there's no Fields. You're looking at this, and we're trying to point blame, but I really more still tie it on Waldron because I try to think of that Seahawks offense last season, and I don't. Like, their running game was okay, but, it didn't stand out to me. When I think about it, I think of three wide receiver sets when it comes to that offense. And you can see it's kind of the same way with this Bears when you got Roma Dunze and then you got Moore and then Keenan Allen whenever he decides to come and play. But I still tie it to Waldron and just how bad and just the center position is and the guard. And they're just no overall just, like, cohesion with this whole team. So I think that's the main issue when I look at this team overall. I'm gonna kind of give, I guess, Chris Morgan a pass right now, but I'm gonna still tie to this offensive line and then the system itself in Shane Waldron.
Yeah, they wanted to keep Chris Morgan. They think he's a good offensive line coach, so they threw him a title, running game coordinator, probably gave him a few more bucks. That's basically what happened. I think David is absolutely right. There isn't enough conflict on the offensive line. You know, when you look at a team, you win the point of scrimmage, and that's how you move the ball. If you start lining up so you can run downhill, and then you try to use play action with a lot of your passing game, that just seems to make more sense with the team that is struggling as much as they are in the interior of the line. So I would try that for a change, especially against a really bad Colts run defense. I would definitely take the invitation they offer you by virtue of their performance over the last two games and accept it. Oh, thank you so much. We will definitely wear black tie and we will run you over. That is a much appreciated invite.
I'd rather black tie than orange helmet.
That's right. Oh my God. Anything but that orange helmet. But yeah, I don't see conflict between the coordinator and the offensive line coach / running game coordinator. I think that Waldron, this is on him because it's his offense. So he's got to be the guy that makes changes based on the lack of top personnel. They do not have a very good offensive line. Okay, So you can't do some of the things you want to do. Let's try to do the most basic offensive line things you can think of, and that is overpower some people at the line of scrimmage. Use a big package and try to run some people over. That seems like a really good idea to try. And here's hoping they can adjust that quickly. Remember, when they hired Shane Waldron, the thing they said about him versus the other candidates they brought in is they really appreciated his versatility. He was the guy that could do this and do that and do the other. Well, what you're doing isn't working, so try something else. Let's see that versatility that was talked about when you were hired.
Yeah, it's a good question.
How surprised were you that Matt Eberflus announced yesterday no changes to the offensive line would be made due to last Sunday's performance? Why do you think the Bears arrived at this decision?
It's a bit confounding. I think they could have made some changes. I don't know. Moving people from one side to another isn't benching anyone. I don't think there's anything wrong with that idea. I think that, is he saying that the changes this week are due to injury because guys are going to be out or guys are not going to be able to practice and he's looking at other things as a result? I don't know why you would believe that last Sunday's performance was good enough. I understand that it wasn't one guy and it wasn't two guys. There is a whole group, and you can't bench multiple people. And the thing that helps an offensive line is having consistency in the same players and getting used to blocking with the same people. I get all of that. But I think we're two games in and we see that there is an area of the team that is not functioning well and not working together. So you've got to do something to figure that out. But I don't know that that an announcement like he made, and again, it was just a comment that he made in a news conference, I don't know that that isn't saying, this guy's not benched, he's hurt. I think there's nothing wrong. Who was starting yesterday? Pryor started. Mark Pryor?
Matt Pryor, left guard for Tevin Jenkins.
You said he was the pitcher, right?
I did not say he was the pitcher.
Calfzilla?
I did not say Calfzilla.
Okay.
Wrong guy, wrong sport.
I thought you said that the other day.
I did not.
Okay.
I think that was you. I think you're stuck in 2003.
I just think it's funny. Calfzilla. He can't move anyone forward. Damn, he can plant those feet
very good
firmly and stay. He can set an anchor.
And very good at the towel drill.
I would say I'm not that surprise. It's still, even though the offensive line is pretty bad right now, I still think it's a little bit too early. I expect maybe probably about week three, a little changes. And also you tie that in with health. Jenkins banged up. I think Bates is somebody they would prefer to have in that starting lineup kind of offensive line. So right now I still say it's wait and see, especially going against the Colts. It's like, okay, look, Colts don't have Buckner. We got this offensive line. Let's see how we do here. After this, if it's still the same issue, I could expect change probably around this time, especially I think with their bye week is coming up in week six too. I'm not going to say it's going to take that long if it's this bad, but that's when you can see changes all throughout everything with the Bears.
That's what I'm looking at too, the schedule. The bye week makes sense. Tevin Jenkins getting injured, and obviously they knew that Sunday night when they got home Monday morning that he was compromised. So that would affect your thinking because you don't want to be open to changes if you're trying to figure out if he's even going to be available. And right now with a deep thigh bruise, you just don't know if he will be. I look at Ryan Bates, and until we see him actually play, he's going to be a figment of my imagination.
Right.
We have talked about this guy forever, and he has yet to play a snap for the Bears. They have talked about him even longer because they've always wanted him to be in a Bear uniform. I want to see him play before I actually – is he a rumor? Is he an actual guy? Have we seen him play? I don't know. So when I look at Eberflus saying yesterday there's going to be no change, everyone's got a role to play. You know how I feel about this. Everybody in a football city's got a role to play. Fans, media, coaches, players. Our role is to, like, are you crazy? You got to make changes. This was terrible last Sunday. You got to look at the wholesale changes and consider moving Tevin Jenkins and getting this guy. Their role is – keep it steady. Don't give up. Believe in your guys. give them another chance. Realize that you're playing a playoff team that's maybe one of the best teams in the AFC. Go back out there against a team that will allow you to get well, establish an identity, and then you build off of that.
And speaking of rumors and the like, ghost players, not only Bates, kind of Kieran Amagaji is in the same state, right? Ooh. Exactly. And the one that I had a chuckle to myself as I read long lamented, forgotten Larry Borum's coming back.
He's coming back.
Did you forget that Larry's out there?
At least he's actually taking a snap with the Bears.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question.
Given that Indianapolis has allowed a whopping 474 yards rushing in two games, that's good for 5.1 yards per attempt, will this be the week that the Bears cure all their ills in the running game? Who leads them in rushing on Sunday, and how many yards will that player gain?
It's not even close. The Colts are giving up 237 yards a game, as the numbers indicate. The next worst run defense, Carolina Panthers, at 199.5. So there's a 38-yard difference between the Colts in last place and the second to the worst run defense. That's bad. That's bad. You talk about a speedway in Indy. That should be every running lane that Bears running backs go through. Checkered flag, please. DeAndre Swift will have at least 75 yards. Roschon Johnson, welcome back. He'll have over 40. They'll get Khalil Herbert involved. This is like an old... the run in the Southwest Conference, all three running backs in the backfield will get their due, get their time, and have their yardage. I think this is going to be a day the Bears run over the Colts.
It should be, but you don't know. This will be the tale to me. Like, if you can't run against this team, like, then what are we going to do? And I want to see Roschon Johnson. I want to see more Khalil Herbert. I do want to see him, and I want to see Swift. I just want to see more running plays. I'm tired of the whole RPO run. I don't want to see all that. I just want get a fullback back there, get another tight end, something. I just want to see more running plays. But this should be, I don't know if it will, but this will be the tell test overall. I just want to see a good mix, and I do not want to see Travis Homer at all. I don't want to see him running the ball at all. That does no fear to, I think, no team right now. No disrespect to him, but I'm sorry, I can't. I want to see Herbert, I want to see Johnson, and I definitely want to see Swift. Three running backs going in for the Colts.
Bayless? Is that who?
No Bayless. No Bayless either. No Bayless. He shouldn't be active.
I will predict that it is Khalil Herbert leading the Bears in rushing with 64 yards on Sunday. And that sounds like it's not a lot, but you figure if he can get 64 and you can get Swift 60. And is Roschon Johnson, is he – I saw him get punched.
He's fine.
Is he? He's okay?
He's fine.
Okay.
He's ready to punch back.
Well, let's give him 20 yards.
He'll smash mouth.
And we'll see how you can add it all up. But right there, you're getting closer, ever so dangerously close to 150 to 200 yards.
So is it going to be over 100? So is that what you got, over 150?
I got him over 150. I got him about 150 yards. I think it's a fool's errand to think they're going to suddenly break 200.
Over 150 would be a good day.
Be a really good day. Good, solid day.
Yeah.
I think, though, that they've got to, run some plays out of just a conventional offense at the line of scrimmage, and that will open up some things, and hopefully that will get them into some play action. They can get the ball down the field after that. But that's the dream, at least for me, going into this game.
It's an interesting question, I think.
What is your reaction to the Brewers clinching the NL Central crown on September 18th and the Cubs falling further out of contention? As absurd as it sounds, a year after poaching manager Craig Counsell from the Brewers, what's the biggest difference between the two franchises now?
Yeah, what's extraordinary is that the Brewers are not spending near the money the Cubs do. And the Brewers have won, what, three division championships
in the last 4 years.
And I think you look at that and you kind of scratch your head a little bit, because the Cubs, were sitting here saying, why aren't they going after Juan Soto? They need to get Juan Soto. They were looking at Otani. The Brewers weren't involved in any of that stuff. And the Brewers aren't going to add Soto to what they're doing. But they have a different mentality, and they have put their team together really well. Their pitching is so much better than I thought it would be when they started getting rid of pitchers. Seems like they make good deals. seems like they're very fiscally responsible. It seems like much more of the dream that you're putting together than the Cubs are. And I am befuddled by all of their success. It's fairly obvious that, you know, as much as I like what we've seen from the manager, and I know there are those who would question, I think Craig Counsell is going to win and be very good here, and I think he knows what he's doing. He didn't get to bring his whole group with him. So it's like the whole band together without the lead singer. So even if Jerry Garcia dies, you can still have the kind of dead experience by going to a concert with those left behind. And it's happened in history. It's not as good, but it's good. And I think that they've got the sort of consistency that you would love to see the Cubs somehow get, and I think eventually they will get it. But it's the biggest difference between the franchises. The Cubs haven't spent money as well as the Brewers. They just haven't. And I'm hoping that, you know, we start seeing some of the young players coming up, and that's the difference. Like, their version of Jackson Chiria comes up and does something, and they're going to be adding to this thing every year now, two or three guys as you move forward.
This season was a failure for the Cubs. You had expectations when you brought in Counsell that you were supposed to make the playoffs. You didn't. And you took the manager from the team. You thought you was going to lessen them, and they still won the division. You are a big market team. This, to me, lies on the front office. You should be in line. Changes should be made. Now it's just say, okay, we got Counsell. He was supposed to do more with less, but I feel like it was expected to be do more with the same team, because I feel like it was the same team for last year, and you just really changed the manager to me. You got to go out and spend money. You got to get a big market player. I wouldn't even say just Soto. Go out and get Pete Alonso too. Get them both. You're the Cubs. Why not? And you add that. I mean, look, you should be in the playoffs, and it is a failure for this team right now.
So congratulations to the Brewers. This is what the disparity is in terms of payroll. The Cubs are seventh in the league, according to SpotRack. $229 million they spent on players this year and their salaries. The Brewers, half that, $114.9 million. They're 21st in the league. The Cubs are spending twice as much money and having half the fun. They're 10 and a half games out. That's embarrassing. So the Brewers, Pat Murphy's law, win anyway. He went find a way to win. They do whatever they need to do. They do get more out of less. They are a team that is the model for smaller market teams that don't want to spend over $200 million or even, heck, $125 million. They find a way. They develop players. They did it without Craig Counsell. And the leader, the band analogy is a good one. You wonder who was really the heart and soul of that band. Maybe he stayed back in Milwaukee. I texted Murph yesterday, last night, congratulated him. He responded in the wee hours of the morning. They were celebrating long into the night in Milwaukee because they deserve to celebrate what they did. Three titles in 4 years? They don't spend that much money to deserve that much success. And they deserve it, though, because they know how to play the right way and they get the most out of their talent. Congratulations.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
What did you make of Adrian Wojnarowski dropping the greatest Woj bomb of all time? His retirement from ESPN in order to accept a general manager job at his alma mater, St. Bonaventure. The role includes NIL allocation, recruiting, and helping coach Mark Schmidt with other aspects of the program.
I think it was a huge surprise, and anybody who respects his work, and so many fans do, so many media members do, if you know him a little bit, this is great for anyone to be in a position where they can walk away from a job that is as taxing as that one had to be, 24/7 lifestyle, 365, and just do what he wants to do, pursue a passion that he's always maybe wanted to pursue, check a box, and go back to his alma mater, and just get off the treadmill professionally, and to take some time to do a job that is not going to be overwhelming, but going to be highly rewarding. So great for Woj. This is terrific news. As surprising as what he will be missed. There's no doubt about that. He will be missed. but you can't help but be happy for him.
I was shocked. Me and Dustin saw this yesterday. We had to check to make sure it wasn't a fake account when we saw it. So I was totally surprised for it. But with that being said, I mean, I'm happy for Woj. If this is what you want to do, you go out on your terms. You got to love that. And, I mean, he wanted to spend more time with his family. I mean, it's taxing. Like you said, 24-7, 365. Like, you know, you're working holidays and stuff like that. So with that being said, you want to be time with your family. I'm all for that. And, hey, you know, you're kind of close to your school. So, hey, whatever makes you happy, I'm all for it.
Yeah, you know, congratulations to Woj. I think it's unbelievable to watch a guy take a step back like that. He was at the top of his profession. He was the best NBA information guy maybe we've ever seen. You know, the Woj bomb became part of the parlance because he was constantly in touch with everyone and talking to everyone, and he was on his phone every second of the day. Here's the problem with that. The problem with that is that, you know, you are at the beck and call of everyone that decides to contact you, and you have to respond to everyone. And one of the reasons they contact you is they know they're going to get their information out as quick as possible, and they're going to get a favorable vision of what they want to say. And if you were not responding to them, they're not going to keep calling you. That's just how it works. So it is a 24/7 job, and it is 365. And I mean, this guy, God bless him. You know, he loves basketball. He's going to help out with some NIL stuff. It's an entry level job. He's like, they're calling him a general manager. They created a job for him, and they're going to let him. It's his alma mater. He apparently does a lot of work with them already. They got a fairly decent program. They've had some success. And it's just going to be going from 100 miles an hour to about 35 or so. Now you're driving the speed limit, and you're going to have a much richer personal life than you had before, because pretty much every minute of your day I wouldn't want that job. I wouldn't want to be on the phone that much. I think it's harmful.
If you're St. Bonnie's head coach, would you walk by Woj's office every day just to make sure you still had your job?